Case 4 from the Hekigan Roku, the Blue Cliff Collection, Duk-san Visits Isan. Engo's Introduction. The blue sky, the bright sun, there is no distinguishing east and west. Time and causation, medicine must be given to the sick. Tell me, is it best to let go or to hold fast? See the following. Main subject. Duk-san came to Isan's temple carrying his pilgrim's bundle under his arm. He crossed the lecture hall from east to west and from west to east. Then, staring around, he said, "Mu, mu," and went out. Secho says, "It is seen through." Duk-san reached the gate, but then said to himself, "I should not be so hasty." So he dressed formally and entered a second time to have an interview. Isan was sitting in his place. Duk-san, holding up his kneeling cloth, said, "Osho," said, "Osho." Isan made as if to take up his hasu. Then Duk-san gave a shout, swung his sleeves, and went out. Secho says, "It is seen through." Duk-san, with his back turned on the lecture hall, put on his straw sandals and went off. In the evening, Isan asked the chief monk, "The new arrival, where is he?" The chief monk said, "When he went out, he turned his back on the lecture hall, put on his sandals, and went away." Isan said, "Someday that fellow will go to an isolated mountaintop, establish a hermitage, and scold the Buddhas and abuse the patriarchs." Secho says, "Frost on top of snow." Secho's verse. The first seeing through, the second seeing through, frost on top of snow, great risk of slipping. Like General Hiki, he entered the enemy camp and narrowly escaped. He made a dash for it, but was not alone. Alas, he is seated among the weeds on the isolated mountaintop. So already the already the fourth day of our training period into the belly of our session, the belly of our retreat, a wonderful ripe time for all of us sitting strongly together like this, a wonderful deep and ripe time. And the atmosphere of the Zendo, the silence of the Zendo, is rich and full and deep, quite a wonderful thing. And this atmosphere can contain, without hindrance, all of the comings and goings, and can also contain and touch and be touched by and convey all of the different aspects of life we experience as we sit here, which approaches the totality, doesn't it? In the sense that sometimes we are sad or feeling quite hopeless about practice and the situation and our way, and other times we are exhilarated and excited and filled with possibility and meaning and bigness and hopefulness. Other times we are in a profoundly equanimous place, on and on and on. The whole palette of human experience is in this silence, and this silence has no problem with it. This silence finds itself, this living silence, this mysterious silence, finds itself in the knows itself in the center of all of these experiences, and is quite, if we can personify this activity, is quite pleased to be there, to know itself in so many, many, many ways. And these many, 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 many ways that come sometimes as isolated ways, divergent ways, or as ways that we might tell ourselves mean that we are isolated strangers in a strange land. In the context of this Zendo, they sing a different song. It's the same song, but a different song. And it's the song of appreciation. It's quite a remarkable thing, isn't it? I don't know about you, but my greatest refuge, my place of power, greatest love and aliveness and intelligence is here, in this Zendo. There is no place I would rather be, no work I would rather be doing, and am happy, actually more than happy, to be with each one of you. So I appreciate that you come. Gives me my opportunity to do what I do. Anyway, certainly I'm sure all of us can appreciate this silence and dare to inhabit or participate in our experience in deeper ways, more varied and varied ways. Dare to, because of the safety and trust and the support of each other, dare to participate in all different kinds of energies or spaces that ordinarily we might blow off or say, well, that's not important, or that's not interesting, or that there is nothing new to be found here. I've been there, seen that, done that. And yet, here in the Zendo, that I've been there, seen that, done that, we ask the question, what is it that I don't know about this experience? And then it opens in some mysterious, often inconceivable way into, you strike a new vein in your practice, you know, working in the mind, you know, chipping away, and who would think, suddenly, tuck, and a glint, and you find a vein in your practice, oftentimes where you least suspect it. And then you have a whole vein, you can mine that vein. We mine those veins. It's quite a thing, isn't it? And also, I think for me, well, for all of us in our whatever kind of work we do in the world, it allows us to be with more and more of life without being so freaked out by it, or without being threatened by it, or without being bored by it, so we can encounter more and more and more beings. And having worked with ourselves in this deep and intimate and challenging way, doing our zazen, this self-fulfilling samadhi that we engage in, this way in which the self comes to know itself endlessly in new ways, we see in our own practice that not only can we be with ourselves in more and more ways, and in more and more areas, but that when we do that and we find in the center of those experiences a world of a bigger meaning, a world of possibility, a world of an invitation in a way, actually, an invitation, and a world of timelessness. In other words, we all have this experience in our koan study or self-study that we find our way into ourselves or into the moment, or Sanchin used to call it the experience of subject, just like this. We find ourselves into our experience in the moment, and we can participate in it in a way where in the fullness of the participation, when we cut the gap and really step into it, there is no other. We are in a world of unity, or in a world of samadhi, or we are in a world of no inside and no outside, a timeless world. And we take refuge in that. It's a strange thing, isn't it? It could be our problem, or our awkwardness, or our misery, or that which is completely unworkable, and yet in the context of zazen practice, in the context of this self-study, this study of touching life and receiving life and conveying our appreciation, then that place is transformed from a place of isolation or a place of you could fill in the blanks, what's wrong or what's unworkable, to a place of fullness. And it's the same place. That's we call the transformative or turning over of consciousness in the Zen tradition, Buddhist tradition. The turning over of consciousness when we participate so completely in it, or we're intimate with it, that it turns up, it turns inside out. So that's quite a blessing, isn't it, that we have that capacity. Now this koan is so many avenues into the koan, so many ways to appreciate it. Last night David spoke about this spirit of this young practitioner, and we all are at different times during the day a spirited young practitioner, and other times we're more on the senior side, or the. But we all cycle through all of these places, and David was saying how he appreciates the spirit of this guy, of his practice, and it kind of, from one perspective, you know, he seems like a bit of a jerk, you know, and kind of an impulsive, full of himself guy, you know, who's larger than life, sort of, you know, narcissistic people who take up a lot of space, but it's not in a good way. They take up a lot of space. They kind of come in and fill the room, and it just gives you like a body cringe or something. You just go, let me out of here. I suppose that might be one aspect of coming in and pronouncing something, whatever it is that you come in and pronounce. I suppose there's nothing wrong with that. From one perspective, we all, as David was saying last night, launch ourselves into different things in our life that at the time seemed quite commendable or exciting or full or good, and then they turn upside down, and what we loved about them ends up being what we hate about them, and we have to get out of it. Funny, isn't it, how things shapeshift like that? You know, you fall in love and with someone, and then spend time with them, and what you love about them becomes what you can't stand about them, or what you love about your teacher becomes what you can't stand about him, or whatever it may be, and they shapeshift all the time. Actually, I think at least one of the things that I was appreciating of what David was saying about the spirit of this guy being the spirit of all of us when we launch into a new excitement in our life, or a new possibility, or a new sense of energy, or a new sense of strength, and wanting to both share that and proclaim it, and you know, just live it out, live it, you know, live the life of that. From that perspective, I really like this guy. You know, he set out being a bit of a fundamentalist in his Dharma practice or in his spiritual life, and came to set people right, you know, with a kind of an aggressive, small-minded either-or mind, I suspect. We all feel that way when we find something new and think that we can't live without it. we get into that space where we imagine that it's the only thing there is, that you were the, when you fall in love, you're the first person who ever fell in love, and you imagine at the time that perhaps nobody else in the world has ever done that before, or but that's the nature of it, isn't it, of that wonderful space of freshness and newness and excitement about something, or you have a breakthrough in your Dharma practice, and you break through, or melt down, or fall into, or are graced by the moment in some new way that you never experienced before, and the whole world brightens and is filled with possibility and meaning and beauty, and it's exciting, and it's a wonderful thing. So, a lot of ways to appreciate this Doksan and his enthusiasm. And moved from, I think what grabs me about him in a way is that he like all of us, was given a certain deck of cards to play with. His clearly was, at least as a young man, a very passionate, enthusiastic, determined, only go straight, kind of guy, which is quite beautiful. He was given a deck of cards, and the deck of cards that we're given is not good or bad, but it certainly is what we have to play with. And it's been given to us by the universe, and we have to find a way to somehow play with it, or use it, or work it well. And it's not just one card that we're given, certainly, like a Dobson, although we see one primary aspect of him, but we're given a hand to play, we're given, a seven-card poker, or we're given a hand to play, and we have to, and we make our way with that hand. And in a way, for me anyway, when I start seeing all of these different cards that I have, or aspects of myself that I have, that are my resource, sometimes I think they're my liability, but when I see it as a mixture of all of these paints or colors on the palette that I can use to play with in my Dharma practice, in my meditation practice, and in my life, that I have not just one card, or two cards, or three cards, or four cards, but I've got about seven or eight primary players or characters that inside of me that I are on this ship, and we're sailing together. And when the characters start to get that there's a captain of the ship, and that the captain of the ship and all of the characters on the ship are playing the same game and have the same direction and the same purpose, then it starts to be more the kind of feeling that I have when I walk into the Zendo, and I feel all of the, in the deep silence and a great space of this room, I feel all of these different energies. And then sort of like when we do that wonderful chanting, that crazy, wonderful, sort of crazy wisdom stuff we do with the Diamond Sutra, and everybody's doing their thing, starts out, reasonably conservative, like a classical piece, and then it starts to, melt into Ornette Coleman and a wild kind of jazz where people are honking and, carrying on. And it's quite beautiful, and they all are, they're all playing in this band, I think, in the same way when we're practicing, and we start to practice this inclusive practice, and we can include more and more of our ways of knowing and being intelligent and loving more of these characters inside of us, then they line up and start to play in the same, or head in the same direction, have the same intention and the same alignment, we could say. And it's not that each one of them is not totally appreciated for what they are, but that they are playing in the context of, for me, they're sailing in the context of this direction that I have seen of value and meaning and beauty of in life, and wishing to convey, as we all do, what we care about, or what we're into, or what we, what we do, artist or teacher or monk, or I suppose it doesn't matter, but we want to play the game as fully as we can, and we want to play including more and more and more energies of ourselves, because we like what we're doing. I mean, it's hard and heartbreaking and difficult, but it's in service of what we love, what we value and know, and we want to convey that meaning, and we want the conveyance of that meaning to be rich and textured and multi-leveled, filled with humor and irony and love and determination and expansiveness and openness and vastness and crankiness, the whole disaster. I certainly feel in the energy and the palette of the Zendo, that whole wonderful rich mix when I come in here, and so I find that helpful metaphor that there I am sailing this ship. We all, each one of us, it's very clear to me, I've known some of you for many, many, many years, and some just a fairly short time, but everyone has had some opening. It's obvious to me. You know, everyone has cracked the coconut, and everyone has glimpsed some, to some level, degree, or intensity, reality, life. Not just your life, but this endless dimension, universal life that animates all creation. We all have seen it. We all see it through slightly different windows and appreciate it in different ways. But we all have seen it, and we all are inspired by it, and we all want to deepen and polish and work on ourselves so that we can have a life that is truly more fulfilling, more intelligent, not in the discriminating way, although it includes that as well. For those people who are engaged in intellectual life, it includes that. But I think we all want to move forward with, anyway. So how to, I guess that's a question that occurs to me, especially as I look into this one and think about, Doksan, and I think about this manifestation of what he is presenting, but it's in the context of a whole life. And that makes him be quite lovable for me, and it moves him out of the asshole realm. I mean, some people make it really hard to love them, but he moves out of that realm and into a richer realm. And also, I think the other thing about these stories is that the story, which are the stories of our life, they're situational. And depending on time, place, condition, and degree, we wear different hats, we enact different things that are totally appropriate in one setting and totally not appropriate in the other setting. So in this context, we need to understand, in the context of Zen, in the Tang Dynasty, and in the context of this life of Zen practice, this was a very big thing that was going on in China. It wasn't like it is here. Same practice, but most of us grew up as hippies, and we were sort of revolutionaries when we started this work, and we wanted to build a new world. I wanted to build a new world order and do something radical and different, and it was totally against the grain of most of my Ivy League upbringing. And I, you know, was product of the psychedelic revolution, and as many of us boomers were, and you know, was anyway. And Zen was like, what? My parents were, you know, mortified when I dropped out of my PhD program and became a Zen monk. I mean, they were beside themselves. I mean, just like, what have we done to deserve this? It's like, I remember when I had these good friends who were members of our community in Providence who were Quakers, wonderful Zen practitioners, but their particular resonant faith was the Quaker religion, so they were active in the Quaker community. And wonderful Joe and Terry Havens, their children. One of them, the daughter became a Mooney, and the son joined the Marines. The son went. This is, you know, back in the Vietnam days. And anyway, that's a stretch to appreciate and include those energies and also differentiate, but differentiate without cutting off. Anyway, back into the koan. I get it all excited. Remember these stories. I forget what I was talking about. But a point being one of alignment in time, place, and condition and degree, and what's right here, or in a context that's actually understandable. So I think that in the context of this young practitioner, in the context of, you know, think about someone. I grew up in the south side of Chicago, and everybody, I was only white face on the Little League, only pale face on the Little League team, and my friends played baseball in the summer, and the rest of the time they played basketball. And if someone came onto the basketball court and said something in the context of playing basketball, it's entirely different than, you know, if you start talking about basketball in the Aituri Forest to pygmies. It has a different context and meaning, and what can be presented in that context of people who know the game well and know what it means to be a rookie and know what it means to train and know what it means to be ripened and seasoned and have profound respect for people who devoted their life to this great work of life and death, this great work of meditation, life practice in this great contemplative tradition. Then a monk comes in and says, walks into the room and says, moo, moo, and walks out. I think the context of that is quite different than the context if, for instance, I remember in the early days of the Sansanin, in the early 70s, we had retreats in the Cambridge, one of the first Zen centers after the first, you know, group of us moved in with him, Bobby Rhodes and me and Louise and Stephen Mitchell and, you know, a handful of people, you know, sort of threw in the towel and said, all right, we're in. That's another story, putting your chips in, isn't it? But anyway, I remember the first time we started doing these sesshin in Cambridge in the early, and they were pretty wild and frontier days, wild and woolly days in the early 70s, and we told people you had to wear a robe when you come to the Dharma Hall. It's a way of respecting and a way of saying we're all aligning ourselves underneath the robe. Of course, we're all men, women, you know, artists, intellectuals, you know, athletes, monks, but we wear the same robe to align ourselves in common purpose, sailing on the ship, on the good ship SS Sansa, towards, you know, hopefully towards freedom. But, so one, we said you have to wear your robe. So one guy showed up in a red plaid bathrobe. seemed perfectly commendable and reasonable to him. Of course, he was slightly crazy, but also in a kind of wonderful way. And we used to walk as we did. Our retreats are much more informal, more on the Vipassana side. But if you're in the Kwan Om and the more, you know, certain forms that are honored and worked with, you know, we all would take turns with the Kiyosaku. I don't know if we still do it, and it's been quite a few years since I've been out kicking around. But anyway, we would take turns with the stick. So each person would take a turn during sitting during a round of zazen with the Kiyosaku, and we would instruct people how to, if someone was sleeping, tap them and put them on the triple warmer and bow and so forth. And this guy, speaking of time, place, condition, and degree, being in sync, out of sync, he used to, you know, people would hit and he'd go, strike one! And I'd be like, well, you know, it's pretty weird, but maybe he just was having a macchio. But then, you know, and he'd wait, he wouldn't do it, you know, that. You know that conditioning that you only do it once in a while and it's much more powerful than if you do it every time. So we give him a break and think, well, we don't want to throw him out. He's a little strange, but we kind of liked his spirit. You know, there he was in his red bathrobe. And he had the chutzpah, you know, just, you know, a great silence in front of the old man, you know, Sansing sitting there. And he just, you know, and we're all kind of, and everybody had a different reaction. And you know, he'd do these kinds of things like, you know, ball three. Go on. Then Sansanin decided that he was encouraging us to come, and they were quite, in those days, Cohen's study with Sansing was quite spirited. It wasn't ritualized. It was much more spirited. There wasn't such a all ways are good, not good, not bad. But it was more sort of a free for all, you know, like a big time wrestling or something. You go in with a guy and you didn't know, and so he'd say, "I want you to, when you come in, you know, come in and manifest one true nature. Just put it all down. Be naked and innocent, and just come in and meet me." So this guy would go up and wait for the bell to ring at the top of the stairs. You know, we had the way station, and he'd take off his robe and strip down naked. The bell would ring, and he'd run in. Yeah! You know, shouting, yeah, you know, shouting. I remember the first, it was great. Also, it was in a small enough house so that if the door to the interview room was left over, and you could, not that anyone was interested in it, but you could, you know, be a voyeur, which is really a lot of fun for all of us. And Sansin said to him, you know, sort of, it reminded me of this koan of the kind of ease, but not stupid ease, of both Rutan and Isan. You know, that people come in and go into the Zendo. And Sansin said in a very calm voice, "You understand one, but you don't understand two." Now it's become, you know, all of those wonderful teaching phrases have become ritualized so they've actually become forms that we can use. But actually, inside the form, if they're done in the right spirit, it's quite a beautiful thing. And also, the point being that time, place, condition, and degree. So I think as we study these koans, we have to, it's helpful to have a little bit of historical context and know that it's not, it would be different than if someone walked in here and said, "Moo, moo," and then walked out. And also from the inside of coming in and manifesting something, your conviction or your love, right? I think there's a great deal to be studied and learned by thinking about how we manifest and convey and present ourselves on stage. The stages of our life, and different stages require different manifestations. Clearly, what you do with your, you don't treat your friends like you treat your husband. You don't treat your husband like you treat, well, maybe you do. But you know what I mean, that it's a different context and requires a different, there is a different wisdom hat that you put on, and a different way of being intimate and relating with love, respect, and so forth and so on. So imagine, it's an interesting thing, isn't it? You come in and you give a talk, or you, teacher, you make a presentation, or you talk to your boss, or you talk to your colleagues at work or something, and you make a presentation, and then you leave. And after you have made your presentation, this part of this koan is, one, the conveyance and the presentation. Like, we present our, we're continually presenting our understanding, whether we know it or like it or not, just by, because we are wonderfully who we are. But also, we are enacting or conveying our understanding when we come into the Zendo and straighten our cushion and bow, and each in our own way, we are conveying our determination, our appreciation, our love, our the whole mix of it all, and all of that in the midst of all that's arising and passing as we do it. And of course, all of the things that arise and pass in our doing it will appear in our life in the different contexts and hats that we wear. I think that's one of the things that I love so much about Zen. But anyway, I was appreciating this koan from the perspective of, after I speak, I go back to my room. After Doksan came and manifested something, he left and went to the door. And he went to the door sometimes, and he thought to himself, Well, we don't know what he thought, but we all know what we think after we present or manifest something, and we go back, we retire to our rooms and perhaps chew on it, or say, maybe I shouldn't have been so hasty when I said such and such, or I did such and such. And there's a certain level of exposure that we, self-exposure that we experience that is quite challenging to be with. I mean, if you're completely, or it can go in all kinds of different directions. If you're more narcissistically combined, it's I was the best or I was the worst, and you just flip-flop between that. But anyway, there's something that comes up, isn't there, in those, in that. And he decided to come back and have another time at bat. Quite a wonderful spirit, you know, to call yourself forward again. Call yourself forward and have another crack at it. So we came back and presented it again, had another time at bat, this time with the old man, with the senior practitioner, and he came in and basically produced another cups, and then walked out and for a time didn't look back. Wonderful spirit, you know, if you know, to go out and on to the next thing, and you know, not carry all that stuff with you and ruminating, how was it, I wonder if they liked me, maybe they didn't like me, maybe I did a bad job, you know, endlessly. Anyway, wonderful koan, isn't it? And so many rich and wonderful ways to appreciate this koan of Doksan visiting Isan. The small self is always manifesting itself in front of the big self. And the big self is, or our larger self, is always a challenge to receive the little more and more of these selves, or be, or host them, or host them. And more gracious the host is, the more revealing is the small self. And the more revealing the small self is of all of its aspects, the richer the game, the richer and more fulfilling and satisfying the game gets. More host is confirmed by the myriad things, and the myriad things are confirmed as the activity of the host, and there is a great freedom that comes in just being who you are, and that freedom continues endlessly.